so excited to have Jonathan Thunder in the studio this morning, trying to keep my being a fangirl to a minimum, but it's a little bit difficult. I've been enjoying your work online and listening to Annie Dugan and Maya Jensen talk about your work for so long, Jonathan. What a treat to actually meet you live and in color.
Thanks, Lisa, and thanks for having me on the show today.
You bet. And you are such a Renaissance man. You're not just a visual artist, but even in your visual art, you've got a lot of different things that you do. Can you kind of give people who maybe aren't familiar with all of the irons you have in the fire, kind of an overview of the different sorts of art that you pursue?
Yeah, sure thing. So I guess for a lot of years I worked as a studio painter. And then I went to school to study visual effects and animation. So since about 2005, I've been also working in animation and some video editing. So over the years, I've become sort of a dabbling in filmmaking, which ranges from live action to animation. And a lot of the filmmakers that I study are they're sort of on the surreal end of the spectrum. So that feeds my films, which feeds my paintings. My paintings sort of feed the films. And most recently, in the last couple of years, I got into illustration.
That's fantastic. I went online this morning and I made a post that you were going to be on the show. And so I went to your website to grab something to illustrate the post. And it was the moon with stirring a pot of what was it, Hangover Mac and Cheese
Hangover
or
Mac,
something?
Yeah.
And the more I look at your work, the more I want to look more at your work. I'm really interested, though, in your evolution as an artist, because when we're kids, we start to, well, first of all, everybody makes art, but for some people, it just sort of flips an internal switch, and they're like, oh, this is what I want to do. At what point did you realize that, first of all, that art was something that you wanted to do? Whether it was for a living, it was probably before you even had any idea about what you wanted to be when you grew up. But at what point did you go, oh, wow, I got to do more of this?
Well, I always point back to the time when I was in the third grade and I was asked to draw as an assignment, a homework assignment, a happy face and a sad face, and I had no idea how to do it, and I was sitting at the kitchen table that night trying to figure out and wrap my little third grade mind around this project. And my mom, she was cooking us some dinner. She came over and asked me what I'm working on, and I told her what the project was. So she sat down and said, why don't you try something like this? And she drew two circles, and in one she drew two little dots for eyes and a smile, and then the other one she drew two little dots and a frown, and it blew my mind. Like, it was like fireworks went off, and I remember at that moment thinking that I wanted to grow up to be an amazing artist like my mom. So ever since then, I was drawing and just making little stories and comics and stuff like that throughout my childhood. And I think that was the one thing that I always knew that I wanted to be.
Those aha moments are frequently so simple, and yet they're so profound, because even to tell the story you can't really capture that shift that occurred inside of you at that time. I'm curious about your work as a native artist. I'm wondering at what point you made a decision, conscious or not conscious, or maybe the decision was made by the people around you, to start talking about your art as Native art, or you as a Native artist. At what point did you say, there's something about my experience that's different from the experience of many of the other people around me, and I want to go into my experience or my history?
Sure. that's a question that I've kind of, I guess, wrestled with throughout my entire art career and learning about art. And I think starting out as an artist, as artists, we just kind of draw inspiration from what's around us and what we know. And on our life path, we never set out to classify ourselves, you know, in the beginning. But I think in my experience in exhibiting in galleries that are geared towards Native art and galleries that are geared towards kind of like an open call to artists of all walks of life, I've found that being classified in art, you know, in the art community is something that just happens. So I've had to kind of take how people have classified my work and sort of make it fit inside my head in a healthy way, because, you know, as my tendency is to rebel. My tendency is that when I think people are starting to figure out what I'm up to, then I feel like I'm being too obvious, and then, you know, the jig is up, and it's no longer fun. It's like a magician telling you what the secret to his trick is. So, I've always had to understand that that's how people are gonna want to classify my work. For me, it looks on my end of the table, it looks like this. You know, I'm from Red Lake. I grew up in an all-Native family from Red Lake, and but we grew up in the Twin Cities, so I had a very urban experience growing up. And I took what, you know, small influence I have as a Native unconsciously going into it and started to make artwork. And it was kind of filtered through an urban lens, so it had a little bit of my own twist onto it. And I've always had a flair for the surreal, or you know, the strange, or kind of like the mysterious. So I've sort of tried to live in that world, and I think moving forward, there were times where I didn't want to be classified as a Native artist. I just wanted to be an artist. And there were times where I didn't care. And I think nowadays, I just sort of like weave in and out of both worlds. You know, I don't really pay attention to what people are calling my artwork. I just try to do what's in front of me. And sometimes, you know, I'm called to make stuff for my community, my Native community. And sometimes, you know, I'm sitting at home just making stuff that, you know, just comes from all over the place. And you know, I think some of the work that I create, you wouldn't be able to look at it and know, you know, that.
Well, the illustration that I mentioned, the one that I grabbed off your website this morning, there's a Native word to describe in the title of the painting.
Yep.
But otherwise, you wouldn't necessarily look at that painting and say, oh, this is the work of a Native. Did you ever get frustrated? Do you find that you ever get frustrated because somebody will say, oh, Native artist, or, you know, Red Lake artist Jonathan Thunder, blah, blah. And you're like, you're missing it. I don't want you to look at this through the lens of Native artist. I'm trying to say something else about the human condition. Is it annoying?
I think early on I wondered why people were doing that, but over the years I think it's just bothered me less and less. You know, there's a certain credibility that comes in some circles with that tag, and then in other tags I felt like I wanted to be more anonymous.
What about the role of healing in art? And without necessarily trying to play armchair psychiatrist, but, you know, the idea of wellness, and we've talked on this particular program, Journey to Wellness, we've talked so often about different kinds of wellness and folks trying to find a way to right either historical wrongs or deal with historical wrongs or deal with some ongoing challenges that they do have in their communities that the white Europeans in Minnesota are not dealing with necessarily. What is the role, do you think, of art and healing? Whether from an individual standpoint to broaden out to, you know, a community standpoint or a cultural standpoint?
That's a good question. That's a question that I think I can, you know, that a lot of points come to mind. For me personally, I've always felt a little more serene when I was working. I think for me, painting and creating in any format is a form of meditation. and it really helps me clear the high frequency noise out of my brain that you know, is operating on multiple tracks. So for me, it's always been a way to sort of help me focus. And a lot of times the artwork, I don't know what I'm doing going into it because it's so highly intuitive, but I'll stand back and look at it, and then it helps me figure out what's going on in my life, or people will comment on it, which is always interesting for me to hear, and it'll help me sort of put things into perspective at that stage. And the paintings and stories that I create are sort of bookmarkers, you know, in my book of life. And for me, that's been the one thing that's always been the most interesting about artists, is when I get to hear about their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, their work is one thing, but then when you hear about the life of an interesting artist, you know, it's incredible. And
but then you go back, I think, and you go back and you start to look for evidence of this, perhaps. You know, if you find out that this person maybe underwent some kind of a trauma or some kind of a creative renaissance, and then maybe you go back and you start looking at their stuff for markers, you know, well, where did this happen? You know, can I see this? If I look at his stuff, can I see it? When you talk with kids about art, how do you talk with kids about art? And do you feel as though when you talk with them that you should, in quotes, talk with them as artist or as a native or as this is a way for cultural healing, or, hey, draw these little cartoony things. They're so cool and they'll just light you up inside. How do you talk with kids about art?
With kids, I just tend to be open and honest and try to be, as direct as I can. And, you know, as an artist, as a native, as a filmmaker, as a painter, I try to discuss all those things with them. And for me, it happens very fluidly. Some of the projects that I've worked on this year, one project in particular was a mural that I was a collaborator on for Lincoln Park Middle School.
Right.
And we collected a lot of images from the students. We asked them to draw their experience growing up in that area and going to that school. And it was kind of filtered through my lens. I saw an opportunity to talk about a legend that the Ojibwe have about the lake. And I incorporated it into the artwork. So I sort of saw my end, and I saw a way to have a teaching moment to introduce these kiddos to something that they probably aren't going to get in school. You know, that stuff really isn't taught in school. So they have no idea about the vast, rich culture that's around them every day, and the history that's, in the water and in the land that they're walking on. So at that point, I was moved to just sort of talk to them about it. And it was great because they were really open to it. It's kind of a vivid story. So even if they picked up about 1% of it, I'll be happy with that, you know. And it's nice to see that image in a public school setting, because when I grew up, I didn't see stuff like that in my school. You know, we got the history that sort of made everything in America seem like it was okay, and you know, like things were really great and fine here. You know, we didn't get the real deal. So for me, it's a platform in which I can stand and, deliver some of the things that I would have liked to have seen.
With regard to Native art, in some instances, is there too much put on it? I'm remembering a short story of Stephen King, or I'm remembering a novel of Stephen King's, and in the novel, his character says to the teacher, can't a story just be a story? Because the teacher is sort of having this sense that the stories need to be a metaphor for blah, blah, blah. And you can just imagine young Stephen King having actually sat through this conversation in college and then regurgitating it and putting it into a novel. Do you feel as though, I just want to be an artist and I just want to make art, but there's so much put on, perhaps, Native art, that this needs to, you know, maybe communicate to Europeans certain profound things, or it's processing deep psychological wounds, or is it Is there just more put on the art than really belongs there, or does it belong there? Are these conversations worth having?
I think it depends on who you ask. You know, if you're in a Native community and you ask a romance writer what they wrote about, they're not going to say, I wrote about Native romance. They're going to say, I wrote a romance novel. And the same with the Black community. You know, like if you ask a Black writer that wrote a romance novel, what did you write about? He's probably not going to say, I wrote a Black romance novel, you know. So there's a very specific body of people who are putting those labels on the work. And like Stephen King said,
Can a
story just be a story? From the perspective of the artist, it is just a story. But I think the people that are kind of holding the cards and holding the keys are the ones that want to put the labels onto it. So it makes sense to them in a historical context. And for me, like I said, I try not to pay attention to them. You know, I don't want them to fog up the lens that I'm trying to create through. And I know that they're going to get, you know, their hands on it and put some words on it and labels that I probably don't even know the meaning to. But in the meantime, I'll just be creating artwork, and that makes it less complicated for me.
One of the things that is really wonderful about getting older is letting go of that sense that you're being, tugged, that you're letting other people tug you, you know, and influence you in one way or another. At a certain point when you start to get older, you just kind of go, don't care.
Yeah.
Not invested in that, kind of unplugged from that part of it, you know. Hope you like it. If you don't, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I, you know, I like to entertain myself.
I that's think, marvelous.
I think when I'm making something, if it's not entertaining to me, if it's not moving to me, then I don't want to show it. I don't want to put it out. I don't want to hand it to the people I'm collaborating with. So in a way, my entire career has been a way for me to just sort of make stories, images, jokes that I will laugh at, and hope that everybody else kind of comes along for the ride, you know. And I'm pretty critical about myself, but at the same time, you know, I just like to see how free, you know, like form the process can be. And it's worked out pretty good so far.
But to talk with kids about art in that way and to say, you make something that speaks to you. You make something that makes you laugh. You make something that puts your pain on paper. You make something that you look at and you go, yes! And then the rest of it, let it fall by the wayside.
I do. Well, let me just say that I do say that. I do encourage kids to be true to themselves and their art forms. But I also try to do the other side of the coin. And that is the side of the coin where, you know, an artist can't eat exposure, quote unquote,
right,
for dinner. An artist isn't going to, you know, pay the bills with good exposure. So I always try to give them the nuts and bolts of the business end. And I always try to drive home that in any art deal, that money should not be a dirty word, and it should be the second word that comes after art.
I think that's a wonderful, because there are so many people that want you to do something for nothing, and oh, it'll be good exposure, you know, and at some point, exactly what you say. No, no, no. I got the exposure part taken care of. Now it's the part where I have to pay rent.
That's right. Yeah,
or
that's,
fill in the blank.
Yeah, they need to know that, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, going to school for it and stuff like that, you know, that stress isn't put on it, you know, what practically that is. And if you can make it, you can. And if you can't, you know, then you have to do stuff. You know, like for me, I work with video. I take a lot of animation commissions. So I get to work with people throughout the year that kind of pay me to do those things. And that allows me the comfort and freedom to make the weird stuff that I find entertaining.
Right, right. Well, but, you know, yeah, there is that. But in addition to the practical part, that we live in a world where we have to exchange money for goods and services, it has to do with valuing your work and valuing yourself, too, and getting to a point where you can say, I'm good at this, and it is worth money. And I don't have to just hand it away unless I choose to.
Yeah, I would say it's worth more than money, and I always feel blessed when I find somebody that finds enough value in my artwork to write a check for it. And I also feel pretty blessed that more and more so throughout the years, I've fallen into a bracket with my the commercial end of my business, where I'm being hired to do the things that are probably a little closer to my personal art form, you know, because of my style and you know, the way that I handle things and things that are interesting to me. Like this weekend, I was out at the Kiwens language camp in Fond du Lac, and I was working with a friend of mine, Nick Hansen, who him and I have worked on films together in sort of like the fine arts sense, but we've also went out there to document, you know, this amazing event, and I learned so much from it, you know, and I'm sure that I will take that experience, and you know, my images and my life will be so much richer because of it. So it's you know, it's been an unexpected journey. Some of that stuff I could never say that I would have ever wanted or predicted, but I'm here now, and you know, it's just been kind of amazing.
Thank you so much for coming in today, Jonathan, for sharing your art with kids, for sharing your art with the rest of us, and taking some time to talk about it. Journey to Wellness is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth campus, educating medical students dedicated to serving rural Minnesota and American Indian Alaska Native communities. You're going to be our guest in the studio again on Thursday. We'll be talking about Bow Wow Pow Wow. I said a couple of my favorite things, dogs and pow wow. So it'll be super fun to talk with you. And Brenda Child, the author of the book, is also going to be on the line with us from the cities. And so the three of us will have a chance to talk about that book coming up later in this week as we celebrate art all week on Northland Morning. Jonathan, thanks again for coming in.
Thank you.
Jonathan Thunder, our guest this morning as we kick off Art Week. Journey to Wellness, once again made possible by the University of Minnesota Duluth Medical School Duluth Campus, a national leader in improving healthcare access and outcomes in rural Minnesota and American Indian Alaska Native communities. It's 8:24, and this is Northland Morning.